hadn't thought about that. I figured some kind of lubrication. I only had two of these things, and I wanted to make it simple. I've tried the extractors before, never had much success, and I didn't have the real small one for this size. It's a, I think it's a 332, something like that. So now that I've got that drill, I've got a handy tool to add to the toolbox.
Roger that. So just be advised, too, with those that if you break that extractor off, I know you didn't use an extractor, but from my experience, it's better to use a cheap extractor than it is a high-priced one. And here's why. Usually the cheaper ones are not as hard as an expensive one. And it's not as apt to break off in the bolt. So I have several types of drill bits down in the shop. And one, you know, left-hand drill bits. Then I have some High Rock, R-O-C, or it stands for Rockwell, High Rockwell drill bits. Very expensive. And those are used when I get stupid and break a tap off or break an extractor off into a bolt. I have to use those expensive drill bits to get through that material that I broke off in it. So just take that and as a tip, I guess. But that's a good case where, you know, a cheap extractor, from my experience, is used a little bit better than a high dollar one.
Chicken and out, Kilo 4, Foxtrot Tango Uniform, KK4, FTU, Richard, Northwest Anderson County, Slaptown. And you are correct. You don't want to break a extractor off because those things are a pain in the butt to get out.
Can you let me verify your call. KK4 FTU, is that right? And I'm sorry, sir, I did not get your name.
And the name is Richard.
Richard, appreciate you dropping by. We'd like to recognize KK4 FTU. That's Mr. Richard down in Slaptown. And appreciate you checking in with us tonight, Richard. All right, Mr. Ed, let's pick it back up. So I'm doing all the talking, so let you talk for a minute. Do want to tell you that I did get your Yagi today. And I'll get it dialed in and get it to Mr. Patrick, and hopefully you can get it by sometime next week. Over.
Appreciate that. Give him my phone number. I'm pretty sure you have it, and I don't know if he has it, but give him my phone number, and I'll go over and pick him up. He's fewer than 10 miles from me.
I want to check things out on it and make sure it's working. But I will get it wrapped up and get it to him next week. And maybe that'll help you out a little bit and see if we can get your antenna situation straightened out.
Kind of a mast on it?
It's not, but I can give you a holler on telephone. And we'll figure something out.
I was wondering what the best way is to put it. I'm going to take off the one I have now and use that same mast. And I was thinking about using a couple of big U-bolts to put it on the side of that.
Okay. Well, we'll work it out on the phone and see what we need to do to get things situated for you. I'm sure we can improve things a little bit. But other than that, what's everything okay up there? You and your missus okay?
We're fine. We had about an inch and a half of rain the last couple of days. Not today. I don't think it did anything today. And yesterday I saw a deer going across our property. I know they're there. I've seen them before. This one was out in the yard grazing, and then took one off up the hill.
Okay. So one other thing I wanted to ask you, and I'm changing gears here. We've got some deer here that have been tearing our garden up. But let's go back to the crew extractor just for a second. So you said it was an Allen. Was it an Allen screw? Is that what you said?
Took an Allen wrench to take it out. I call it a hex wrench, but I guess Allen wrench is about the same thing.
Was the Allen head, was it wallowed out so that the wrench would not fit it?
So I didn't have the right size wrench. I thought it might be metric. It's in between two metric sizes, so that didn't go. And then when I took it in, when I finally got him out and took him in, and we found a wrench that would fit. So the wrench I had, I think there was some distortion to that.
So next time that happens and you don't have the right size Allen wrench or the hole in the Allen bolt or head is a little bit sloppy or whatever, just you try this trick for a little bit, and it's what usually works for me. Like I said, normally when I get them down here in a machine shop, they're, you know, it's usually pretty bad. But what I've been able to do is to take the Allen wrench that you're using, if it's too small or if it's not fitting right, heat the tip of it a little bit. Get it as hot as you can. If you can get it, you know, bright orange, then get it bright orange. Tap the end of it with a hammer and swell it. Swell the Allen head, the Allen wrench, so that it won't fit. And let it cool. It cools off and you can handle it. What you'll see if you look at it closely is where you hit it with a hammer, it'll be mushroomed on the end, but there will be a taper to it, and it will taper down to the original, you know, hex, the how it was made, the original size. And just take a small bench grinder and grind off the mushroom portion until it fits. And usually that'll, you know, if you take a hammer to tap it in a little bit, then that's even better. But, you know, try that out. And let me close this down a little bit. I want to talk with Mr. Geary for a little bit. So I'm sorry, Ed, for talking so much. Go ahead.
Contact. Yeah, excuse me for breaking in. My name's Doug. Call sign K4 Delta Bravo Sierra here in Hartwell, Georgia. Just wanted a signal report.
If you don't mind, can I have your call again, sir?
Roger. It's Kilo 4 Delta Bravo Sierra. I've checked in the Blue Ridge Net before, but I just wanted to. I got a radio that I had in my back packed away, and I never could quite figure out how to program an ICOM V8000. And I got it figured out, and I just was. This is my first contact on it.
I got you in the repeater very well, Doug, from Hartwell. I do think the mic gain is pretty high on the radio. If you could back down on that just a little bit, that would help things out. It's not bad. There's nothing there that is distractible. I don't hear any background noise or any hiss or anything, bacon fry or anything like that. Like I said, I think the mic gain's a little bit high, and because it's so high, I can't really hear what's in the background. But other than that, it's clean as a whistle.
Let me back off a little bit. I have a habit of swallowing my mic. Does that sound any better?
That does sound better. Sounds a lot better. So now I can hear what's going on in the background. I don't hear any issues. at all.
I've got fans going on my air conditioner on here in my office and shop out here. I do have a question, though. The other gentleman was talking about getting a bolt out of a piece of equipment he was working on. And I work at Ace Hardware in Livonia, and I had a gentleman come in trying to find a metric-sized hex, Allen wrench, I call it. It struck me. He sounded like he had the same problem. I wondered if he was the same gentleman.
Mr. Ed lives in Brevard, North Carolina, but I don't. Ed, you didn't drive to Livonia to get an Allen wrench, did you? Well, fellas, listen, I'd love to hang around and talk with you for a minute. I really would, but I need to be fair to other people on the stump tonight. So let me move on to Mr. Gary, but after I clear him out, if y'all would like to sit around and talk, we'll talk about nuts and bolts all night. But Mr. Gary did sign up for Drag Juice, so let me jump down there and see what we can talk about with Mr. Gary. So let me move on down the log. Appreciate it, fellas. That's KO4NUE. Stand by. Sorry about that. KI4DOS. Mr. Gary, you're next on the list tonight, sir. Go ahead and take it.
4NUE and Annette, KI4DOS. Well, good evening again, Mr. Chad, Miss Anna, and Annette. We had a great day today. Went over to the cooking area and ate a bunch of good food. I tell you what, folks, as far as ham radio people go, they know how to cook and they know how to talk. So, two things we can do is eat and talk. But we had a great time over there. After I left there, Chad, I went by Miss Jenkins' house. She's the widow of the Silent Key, Guy Jenkins, and talked with her and happened to run into one of your neighbors over there and talked to him for a good while. We had a good time. Stayed over there longer than I meant to. I meant to go in and walk out. But there again, we got to talking and had a good time. Got on back here to the house and unloaded my truck. And a little while later, we ate again. And so I probably won't eat anything tomorrow, probably, or at least I won't eat much. But Joy said, yeah, she's in the other room monitoring me. And she's like one of them little hall monitors, you know, the little tattletales. But anyway, we had a good time, and oh gosh, we just carried on with a whole bunch of stuff. Said I came home and emptied out my truck, had to put some things away, and got that all taken care of, and I was surprised I didn't have errands to run.
Well, I'm glad you came, and it was nice to have you there, and share some laughs and whatnot, but you are right. The food was top notch. I mean, you know, you get somebody that makes a dish and brings it. You know, that's always a good thing, especially you know with the desserts. But I do to make sure Miss Joy knows that. Our beans were, you know, absolutely outstanding. And if I can remember right, I think you probably took an empty pan back of beans or pretty close to it. Was that right?
There, it was about two spoonfuls left in the pan. And I'm gonna tell on all of us. She made 6 pounds of beans, a little over 6 pounds. So that's what that pan had in it. So we had a lot of beans, but we had some good eats, no doubt. Desserts were absolutely wonderful. One fella brought some homemade brownies, and I ate one of those, and I said, golly, homemade ice cream and yeah, well, it just, the list just goes on. There was too much over there to tell about. I did make a video of the food table and the dessert table though, Chad.
4NUE with KI4DOS. Well, Gary, I wish you'd send me that. I didn't get an opportunity to do any of that, and after the event was over, I was pretty angry at myself that we didn't get a group photo, and that won't happen again. That won't ever happen again. You always take a photo, you know, especially when you get that many smart people together under a roof. You better get a photo of it and frame it, right?
I did take a picture of the food, but I didn't take a picture of the folks eating. I figured they might get upset if I showed everybody in their plates and how full they were and that sort of thing, or how empty the plates were after they got through eating. But anyway, that would have been a great idea, about taking a photo of everybody that was over there. We just had a marvelous time and enjoyed the day. It was not too hot down there. A little humid, but that's to be expected this time of year. And so we, all in all, I think everything just came off without a hitch. You know, it's just wonderful, and the folks and the fellowship and everything else, the food. We had a great time. But anyway, I said, what else have I done today? I did something else. I can't remember what it was since I've been home, but I've been in here on the stupid computer that keeps thinking it's smarter than I am. I'll type a word in there, and it'll say, no, you didn't spell it right, or you didn't do this or something. And, you know, I want to throw it out in the yard somewhere and run over it with a lawnmower, but I don't guess I will.
So let me tell you this, Gary. So, you know, me and kids, especially the boys, we always play pranks on one another, you know, or that's kind of our deal, you know. Well, one year, my middle son, I don't know how he did it. There's a way to do it. He went into Windows and changed the key commands on my keyboard. So, you know, the letters is all jumbled up. You hit the letter A, but it would type a letter Q or whatever, you know. So he got me on that. That was a good one. But a couple years later, my son, I upgraded my phone. We got a little plan with AT&T, you know, upgrade every 2 years or whatever, and they'll give you the phone or whatnot. Well, him and Anna went and picked the thing up for me at the Apple store. And he fired it up on the way home and turned it on. And in the text function, when you text something, every time it detected a word with an S and an H in it, it would say shut up. Or maybe it was just an S. It would automatically autocorrect shut up. So, you know, if I was spelling a word, you know, system or whatever started with an S, it autocorrect and put shut up in there. And, oh, he got me good. He got me good on that one. So that's kind of started all the pranking stuff. But they're, with a computer, they'll get me every time. But the other stuff, I got them.
What the fun part about having kids is, you know, you can prank on them and they can prank on you. Mine do me that way all the time. So, I just got to where I grin and bear it and don't fuss about it at all. But, you know, when I get around to giving them payback, they don't say anything either.
Right, and that's the thing, is that, you know, I had my middle son, I played a trick on him where every time he put the hit the brake lights on the car, and the buzzer went off underneath the dash. I got a video of it, and it's, Daddy, sometimes that's, that wasn't funny. But it's always funny 2 or 3 days later, But I've told him a couple times, hey, it's, I'm just paying you back for, messing with my phone. So, we don't let it get out of hand. But you're right. They don't like it when they get got, but they sure do like it when they get daddy.
True too. And I tell you, we can always remind our children, whether it be the girls or the boys, that hey, once upon a time we taught y'all to use a spoon.
Oh yeah, you're exactly right. my oldest son, he's always been the one that's the eye roller. You try to teach him or show him or this, that, and the other, and he'll just, oh daddy, and he'll roll his eyes like you old thing, But he got married about 6-8 months ago, and he's the responsible man of the house, trying to fulfill that role, and he doesn't give me those eye rolls anymore. I notice when I try to tell him what I think about the situation, he, instead of rolling his eyes, he leans that ear a little bit. You know what I mean? So I think he's starting to learn.
Yeah, I don't know. With my two boys, they start off when they're small children. They think daddy, mom, and daddy know everything, and then they get a little older, and they say, well, maybe mom and daddy don't know too much. And they get a little older, and they say, well, mom and daddy don't know anything. And as the years go by, they finally come back around to say, mom and daddy pretty smart. I should have listened to him when I could have, but that's the way it goes. Chad, I've bumped my gums long enough. I'll turn it back over to you and let you go on with it. You and Miss Anna have a great evening. We had a wonderful time today. Thank you for all that you did, and all Miss Anna did, because she worked like a Trojan down there. And we'll hope to see y'all and talk to you real soon, and we'll turn it back over to you and let you carry on with the net. Might be some more folks out there want to bump their gums. So y'all have a great evening. 73 there, young man. KO4 in UE in the net. KI4DOS.
Harry and Miss Joy too. Y'all have a wonderful night, and a good Sunday tomorrow. So all right, let's see if we got any more people that like to check in, and then we'll swing back to Mr. Richard or Ed, follow up with them. Any station that like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, please call KO4NUE. So let me swing back to Mr. Richard. If you're still in there, Mr. Richard, I didn't mean to sound rude to you or anything, but if you're still in there and you'd like to carry on, then just let me know, and I'll sit here with you a while. All right, Mr. Ed, WDARON, you still in there, Ed?
RON, I'm still here. I dug out the envelope that little wrench was in. It's a 10/32 set screws, and it looks like the wrench is either a 3/32 or 3Z, which doesn't make any sense, and then you've got their office number.
The 3/32. Boy, that's a fairly small thing. What'd you break it off, and did it just... What's it in, Ed?
TV antenna holding the two sections together.
See, then it's been exposed to the weather.
Several years old, not being used. Somebody in the club gave it to me. I've got an old CB radio that I figured I might as well try it out, hook it up, and he's got a base station CB antenna, so I want to try that, and it's got two sections to it, and the two set screws hold the two sections together. And it's small. That's why I didn't even want to try a normal size extractor. I don't have anything that small.
Right. So that left-handed drill bit took it right out, didn't it?
So I got the right size wrench, it came right out. And then I had gotten two more longer ones, about twice as long as what was in there. And I put a little bit of oil on it, and they went right in.
Good deal. Well, you kind of get lucky with, you know, Alan. That's that's holding the antenna into the base. Is that right?
It's two long pieces. It's a full length, I guess. I don't know. I didn't measure it. It's probably about 10 feet long, whatever, 102 inches or something like that. And it's in two sections. Each section is about roughly 6 feet long. And these two screws hold it together.
Okay. Well, that would be called a grub screw. G-R-U-B. And some people just call them grubs. But, you know, Allens are good at, they're kind of good at that. But, boy, they sure are aggravating when they get exposed to the weather a little bit. And I suspect what's happened is that moisture collects in that Allen head down in the pocket. And as it rests over time, that rust pulls material away from the wall. And what ends up happening is, you know, you think, well, my Allen wrench is too small, or I don't have the right size Allen wrench. But the reality of it is the material's just pretty much just rusted away, you know. So, but you did good. You got it out. That's a good thing.
I had to drill it out, but I didn't want to use a normal drill because I figured I would mess up the threads. And then when I took it in to show them what I was trying to do, I didn't take the whole antenna in, but I had a picture of it. And then he suggested the left twist drill, and that was something new to me. I had never even encountered one of those. So when I tried that, they came right out.
Okay, so my cousin, he lives up in Liberty. We both have machine shops. And he's about probably the best machinist I've ever worked with. But we bought a used machine shop out, I don't know, a couple years ago. Bought pretty much everything that was there, you know, all the tooling and some machines and this, that, and the other. And I bought a whole cabinet that was full of taps. Any kind of tap you'd ever want, you know. Some of that old weird thread stuff that, you know, nobody uses but a machine shop, that kind of stuff. Well, I just put them all in a drawer, separated them, you know, put them all in a drawer and didn't read them close. And got ready to tap something one day, and I could not get the tap to start. It wouldn't start for anything. And I'd pull it out and look at it. Pull it out and look at it. Now, what is wrong with this stupid thing? And then finally, you know, took a look at it, and after, you know, the size on the tap, it had L period, H period, which obviously stands for left hand. And so I had to go back through them and pick out all the left-handed ones, but you got to be careful with that left-handed stuff. Now, let me give you another little tip here, Ed. W-E-W-D-A-R-O-N. Put a piece of tape around that drill bit. And you don't have to write anything on it, but just put a piece of tape on it, like a flag. Because in 8 months now, when you forget about that left-handed drill bit, you got to put it on something that really matters, or something that may be cosmetic. and you're going to mess it up because, you know, thinking it's a right-handed drill bit and it's not. So don't ask me how I know that. Just do what I tell you to and you'll stay out of trouble.
I tape and marked it. I have it in the original package. I cut off the end to get it out and then taped the end shut. And I just marked it with a piece of blue masking tape to call attention to it, and I'll have it in with my other drills.
Small stuff like that, you know, you know, what if it's, you know, something your wife needs fixed, or what if it's, you know, on your radio, and, you know, you're trying to drill a hole that's got a nice cover on it or something like that. And it, you know, you'll mess something up in a heartbeat because it won't start. It just won't cut because, you know, you're moving in the wrong direction with it. And I've learned that lesson too. I don't know how many lessons I've learned with drill bits, but I've gotten pretty good at them as far as, you know, sharpening them. And I've tried every trick in the book on sharpening a drill bit and finally learned the secret. It took me 10 years to figure it out, but I finally figured out how to sharpen the doggone things.
For a sharpener, but I never did enough with it, so I never used it. Funny little things, you put the drill bit into the hole and it's got an abrasive wheel in it. And different size holes like a pencil sharpener for the different size drills.
I've tried the sharpeners, I've tried the jigs, I've tried, Dad finally passed along his little tip to me that's been pretty helpful. And matter of fact, it's the ultimate help, to be honest with you. And I've always been able to, you know, get the drill bits right. Because on a, you know, a handheld drill motor or something like that, it's not that critical, I guess. But when you got it in a lathe or a milling machine, you know, if you don't get it right, it won't start right, or it only cuts on one side and messes the part up. So, you know, like I said, Dad finally passed along his little secret to me. I can do pretty good with them now.
It's one thing if it's your stuff, but if you're working on somebody else's stuff, that creates a real problem.
I've got a little bit of stress with it too, and, you know, I love the ones that drop things off and say, This is the only one on the planet. There's not another one of these, so don't mess it up. and they always tell you that after they've been working on it for a week, or it comes here in pieces or parts, or it comes up, you're so boogered up that you look at it and you go, my goodness, why did I even agree to this? But, you know, you gonna do this much damage to it, and then you gonna tell me not to mess it up? Come on.
That's what the client doesn't tell you. That's a big thing to you, but they always seem to think it's not anything. Lawyers have a big problem with that.
Not that. I've learned over the years not to take anything in a lot of pieces or parts. I just tell them, no, I'm just not going to mess with it. Because, inevitably you end up losing that one spring or losing that one little ball bearing or whatever little widgety widget. And you just, you know, you can't get the thing. You know, and then you're going to be the one that's blamed for losing the parts. You know, no matter how many tin cans they brought it in here, you're the one that's going to get the blame for it, right?
That's why if I'm taking something apart, I try to lay it out in the order I took it apart. I just about finished my bathroom and was putting the doorknob back on, and it wouldn't go right. I could not figure out what was wrong with it. So I set it aside. Next day, it went together fine. I don't know why. And I had pulled out another knob set, but it didn't have screws with it. And the only screws looked like they went with the other knob set rather than the one I was replacing. But they're the same size screws, so I use those screws.
So I do a lot of engine work down here, and sometimes I get aluminum engines, blocks, whatever. And you have to be, really careful with what I use, a piece of cardboard. And I'll normally, if it's like a water pump or something, when I get the new one, I'll lay it on a piece of cardboard and trace it out on the cardboard. And when I take the bolts out, I'll pierce the hole in the cardboard where the bolt goes. Because sometimes those bolts are a quarter of an inch longer, and you can't just put them in any hole, because if they're too long, you'll pierce the water jacket. And I've learned that lesson too. So I always use a piece of cardboard, especially when there's different size bolts involved. If they're all the same size, I don't do it. But you have to. You get in trouble if you don't.
Taking pictures now that we've got the phone with the cameras, I started taking pictures of stuff as it appears when I first get it, and then depending on what it is, as I disassemble it, I'll just have a sequence of pictures.
So I've got a camera on a little tripod there in the shop, and things that are complex, I'll just film it, set the little tripod thing up and film it when I'm taking it apart, especially when I don't have the repair kit to repair it. And a carburetor is world's worst. Just film it, and then because when you have to order the parts, and you have to wait a week or 2 weeks for the parts to get here, you've already forgotten how the thing goes back together. So I keep a camera down there in the machine shop, and I'll film myself usually, trying to take it apart, and then make some verbal notes as I'm taking it apart. And you would be surprised how many times I've gone back digging through that footage trying to find out, well, where does this thing go? And, so that's, you're right. You're on the right track. That's a good idea.
I also do, depending on what it is, and I'm ended up putting some quarter round in my bathroom and had a big problem in trying to figure out how to make a joint on a particular angle. But I'll mark them, put the two parts together, and then just draw one line for one set of parts, and then the next time I'll draw two lines and then three lines so I can match up the parts and where they go. Because when I had a piece of stuff that was broken into lots of pieces, a piece of ceramic. So when I got one that fit back together, I would mark on the back of it with the number of lines so I could match up those lines on the spot where I needed to fit it together.
WDARON. Yeah, things that are clocked like that, you have to, I usually use a center punch. I've got a couple of spring-loaded center punches, you hold in your hand. And when you push on them, they build up, pressure. And when you get them pushed so far, they'll snap and release that little hammer in there. Those things aren't much. It's like $4 or $5 a piece, And those are the handiest things, you don't have to have a hammer. You just, something that is clocked, or it has to go back, anything has a circumference on it. I just marked both pieces with a center punch, and that way I don't, you know, I'm not struggling trying to get the thing back together.
Old clocks that I got when I was in Japan, and I took them up to get them reconditioned, and he would inscribe on each of the gears what it was, just a number. The numbers meant something to him as far as sequence of putting it back together, so he knew how to put it together.
Well, these old engines that come through the shop down here, I do a bunch of older stuff that newer machine shops, you know, they don't want to deal with that older stuff. Because, you know, there's some problems that come with age, you know. You have to be mindful about what you're doing. And if you mess something up, you can't, some of this stuff, you can't go to the junkyard and replace it, you know. So, I have to be really careful. But on the inside of the engine, when they come from the factory or whatever, you know, the machinist gets to stamp, you know, usually a good machinist has got his own set of stamps, you know, that he'll use to mark things with. And you're right, typically they're the only ones that know what it means. But over the years, some of the older stuff has come through here. You can see the machinists, some of them from the factory, that have, you know, put their mark inside of the engine block or, you know, on a crankshaft or whatnot. And I've seen some pretty comical things that's been stamped into an engine block, you know, especially Mopar stuff. You know, their engine assemblers were quite comical.
Tell a joke when he was a battery commander, and he was enlisted before he was commissioned, so he knew a lot of the tricks. They were having an IG inspection, and the mess sergeant had all of the silverware laid out to show that he had it all. And my father said, "Yeah, okay, you got one of these alphabet punches." And yeah, he said, "Well, let's mark it all so we know it's ours." And the sergeant had a fit, said, "No, we can't do that." And of course, he had borrowed it from the battery next door.
Right, so my mess sergeant, when I first got in, he had two sets of his mess kit for the, you know, for the unit. You know, because when inspectors come in to look at things, you know, looking at a rifle is one thing, but when you're looking at something that prepares food or holds liquid, they're pretty picky with that kind of stuff, obviously, because, you know, it's handling food. So he had two sets. He had a set that he cooked with, and he had a set that he kept wrapped up in plastic on the shelves. And you were not allowed to use them whatsoever. And when we had inspections, he'd put that, you know, new stuff out, and they knew what was going on, but they didn't, you know, hey, nothing they could do about it. That's all I got. But he was kind of tricky that way.
Myself, but back in school, we had M1s, and we kept them in our rooms. And, of course, the inspectors, the ones that we had, we actually used out in the field, so they got banged up, and we'd have to refinish them. But I had one that I had picked up somewhere, or my father got it, and it was a really nice stock. It was finished nicely, it had nice grain, and I kept that one for my inspection stock, and that's what was on the rifle most of the time, unless we were going out in the field.
Right. Well, those, you know, those M1s are, you know, they're prized today, and they are nice rifles, especially, you know, walnut stock. They're known for that American walnut, you know. And I've learned a lesson with those things is, you know, if you get one that's got dented up or got beats in it, or where, you know, it's put an indentation in the wood or something, you know, You use a wet napkin with an iron and just iron, you know, get the steam built up and iron over that hole. I know it sounds crazy, but it'll fill that void full of steam and swell that wood, and it'll usually bring that old dent right out. And it works really well. You know, give it a try next time. It does work good.
Is that how it would bring it out? We used to use the bottom end of a drinking glass, which was rounded, and we'd rub the wood with that, and we used a lot of linseed oil. Really wet it down with linseed oil, and of course wipe it off good afterwards. And I guess that would do the same thing. It'd bring the grain up, and then we'd rub it down with the glass bottle.
And with what, Ed?
Glass, the normal drinking glass that you'd have in the medicine cabinet, but they had round bottoms. The edges, if you envision a cylinder, and then around the bottom edge of the cylinder, it would be rounded.
Okay, all right. Well, that sounds... I'll try that. I've never thought about trying that, but I'll give that a shot next time I get a piece of, you know, nice walnut down here with a gun stock on it. It's always not nice to know this little tips and tricks like that. But, well, anyway, Wade, I'm glad you got your bolt fixed up, and the left-handed drill bit worked out for you good. And like I said, I'll get the Yagi to you this week. I want to, you know, check things out on it again and make sure it's good to go. But I'll pass the information along to Mr. Patrick, and y'all can work it out. I'll be anxious to see if that fixes your problem.
One more trick, you're probably aware of it, but in shiny shoes, we discovered that if you use a pantyhose as a buffing cloth, the nylon generates heat, which, of course, slightly melts the wax and brings up a real nice shine to it.
Well, I'll have to give that a shot next time. But Ed, I am definitely showing my tired, so I'm gonna say 73s to you tonight, and see if there's any more check-ins. Go ahead and send my net report. But it's always nice to talk with you, and like I said, I'll be in touch with you next week, probably through Patrick or whatnot. But you have a nice night, sir, and I'm gonna clear on out on your final.
You might try for your insect bites. I know that tobacco is supposed to work, but I found tea bags can sometimes help that. If you do the same thing, you wet them down and then put those on the bite. So good talking to you, and I'll be talking to you later on. I got the test results, and they looked real good. So I'm going to go back to sorting out stuff.
Well, I'm glad you got the results, and I think your station did come up, so I was pleased to see that. But at any rate, 73 is Ed, and you have a nice night, sir. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. It's KO4NUE. I'll be clear with you. All right, let me go ahead and see if we can finalize the net and see if there are any additional check-ins. Alpha through Zulu for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Please call KO4NUE.
KO4NUE. I'm sitting here checking the mail. Let me go ahead and check in, if you would, sir. Please check in Alpha Kilo 4 Hotel Romeo, AK4HR. The name is Mike. Location is Simpsonville tonight. No traffic, no comments. Good to hear you running the net tonight. I heard you say just a minute ago your tire was showing. So sounds like an awesome net as long as it's been running. So if you'll just check me in and out, Chad, and we'll talk again soon. 73 to you and everyone on the net.
I got you. Would like to welcome and thank you for checking in. AK4HR, that's Mr. Mike from Simpsonville. Nice talking to you, sir. I hope to see you here pretty soon. on another test day, Mike. Okay, any more stations, Alpha through Zulu. If you'd like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, please call KO4NUE. Go ahead, recheck.
I'm sorry, I will let you go. Just as soon as you tell me how it is you found or what it was your dad told you about sharpening bits, I've been sitting here for the last hour waiting for a chance to ask you.
Hey, as long as you know I'm showing my tire, then you don't hold that against me. I don't have an issue staying up as long as you want. So here's the trick: is if you use a die grinder disc, it's thin and it's flat. So the hard part on a drill bit is getting the relief cut into it, because the relief is what creates the edge, actually. But if you don't get the relief right, or if you don't get them equal, then when you try to cut the hole, the drill bit will pull to one side, and, you know, when you've got a hole that needs to be in a certain spot, and you don't have drill bit sharpened right, it's gonna move the hole. So to prevent that, you sharpen it, and that's getting the relief, because you have a relief on the backside, but then you have an angle on the point you have to achieve. All of that at the same time. So what Dad taught me was that he'll take a die grinder disc. And you take another die grinder disc and cut slots in it. Just understand, I'm not saying this is the safest thing in the world, but I'm saying, hey, it works. So you cut slots in the die grinder disc and cut through it, so that when you are trying to sharpen a drill bit, you can look through the disc as it's spinning, and you can see the material through the slots that you've cut in the die grinder. You can see in real time what you're actually doing to the drill bit, and you can make corrections on the fly. Now, if you think about that for a minute, now, doesn't that make sense?
Okay, I got it now. That sounds 100% right. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And why it happens is, of course, our persistence of vision is just one of the things our eyes does for us. We can actually see through that spinning slot. And if you do multiple slots, of course, I guess you have to be careful about balancing that. I'd have at least two. But that's great, and I didn't want to keep you, but I wouldn't want to. I was going to get an answer to that, or I couldn't sleep tonight. Somehow, thank you for that. You have yourself a good night's rest. KK4JBQ.
Chad and Larry, I guess. I was going to share my drill sharpening trick, too, that I also wanted to get back to when you were talking about sharpening drills. We used to deal with some larger drill bits that you couldn't do on a bench grinder. So we had the big, wide sanding belt, and we used the Burr Park bone. So we would use those, and, you know, the back side where the cutting edge is, you need to get that away anyway for relief. So you start on that back side and then roll to your front edge, your cutting edge, and you get them evened out. Now, I usually did use a sterret drill point gauge to kind of help you get the angle right. And once you get one side of it to the right angle, you you know, your muscle memory kicks in and you hold it to that same one on the other side. And I would do started off with the big drill bits like that, and I just got to where I did that with everything down to probably about a 16th. And if you were drilling hard stuff, you can split the point first. I would split the point first on the corner of the grind, bench grinder, and then take it over and finish it off on the belt header. Over.